Good evening, and thanks for tuning in. You're listening to RMU Radio, and this is Sports Takeover. Matt and Chris with you on this Wednesday night, and we have a jam-packed show, so let's get started. All kinds of things from all kinds of sports to cover. Let's start with a sport that hasn't quite begun the season yet, the NBA. We're going to take a look at the season as it gets ready to start. Chris, lead us off.
So last year, the NBA Finals saw the Golden State Warriors defeated once again. Thankfully, everybody in the NBA except for people in the San Francisco area were cheering as Kawhi Leonard and the Toronto Raptors claimed their first title, Kawhi second. He, of course, won MVP because, well, he was just amazing throughout the entirety of the playoffs, had a great offseason. He's no longer with the team. A lot of shifts have been made. He's now with the Clippers. Seems like every single big name that wasn't LeBron James or Steph Curry or James Harden is on a different team this season. So there's a lot new this year. It seems like that's the way it's been for the past few years. People take 1 year with a team, they say, we didn't quite do it, so I got to go somewhere else, and I guess that's a trend to come.
Yeah, there's been a lot of movement, and let's start in the Eastern Conference Atlantic Division, where there's been a lot of shuffling between teams in the division. This division saw four teams make the postseason last year, with the New York Knicks being the only team that did not get in.
And they will not get in again this
year,
too.
No, I agree with that. The Toronto Raptors, of course, as you mentioned, won the NBA title. Philadelphia, Boston, and Brooklyn also got in. Brooklyn made some of the biggest splashes this offseason, adding Kyrie, KD, and DeAndre Jordan.
In doing so, though, KD is still not going to be with the team for the majority of the season.
Right.
Possibly the entire year, but certainly at least half the season. However, Kyrie and DeAndre Jordan are ready to go, and those are two good pieces to a team that was already decent enough. Now, they did lose D'Angelo Russell in the shuffle. He went to the Golden State Warriors. But I think most people in the league would argue that Kyrie Irving is an improvement over D'Angelo Russell anyway, so he should bring more success to this team. They were the sixth seed, had 42 wins, so not too good. But as far as the East is concerned, that's pretty good seeing how the rest of the teams are usually bad or even worse that make the playoffs. So I think with the improvements they've made, they can surely make themselves an upper 40s team.
I would even argue that they might be able to crack the 50s.
Really?
Just because I don't think this division is quite as strong as they were last year. I think Toronto losing Kawhi, losing Danny Green, who was a decent part of that championship
team.
Big fan
of Danny Green.
I am as well, and I think that that hurts Toronto. And not that they didn't bring anybody in, but there's not pieces there that were brought in that replace those kind of guys. Philadelphia loses Jimmy Butler. They lose J.J. Redick. They bring in Al Horford, but I don't see that as being a major improvement for this team. A team that had a very nice starting lineup, as we had discussed on the show last year, but I don't see them being significantly better than they were last year. Boston has kind of turned into a mess after, you know, this time last year. You and I both had them in the finals, and a lot of other people had them in the finals as well, and
popular
they didn't
pick.
Get anywhere near that spot. Obviously, Kyrie gone, Horford gone, Kemba Walker does come in, and as Cantor comes in, but again, I don't see those as being moves that get the Celtics beyond where they were last year. To me, Brooklyn is the only team in this division that has made significant additions.
So I agree with you on this. I see this division as very similar, except basically Toronto just drops off, and as a result, everybody else increases. While the Sixers did lose Jimmy Butler and J.J. Redick, Butler I don't think is good for teams. You can't just go to now his fourth different team in, I think it's been 4 years. He was with the Bulls, got traded to the Timberwolves, didn't even last a whole year there, went to the Sixers, now is with Miami following this offseason. So he seems to be not great for the locker room, and I think everybody that's not in the league would agree with that statement. Joel Embiid is excellent. Ben Simmons is a very good point guard. Not a good shooter, but a good point guard. I think they are good enough that they can get the Sixers to the 51 win mark where they were last year, possibly even more. Boston, they're a team that's like, they're all right. They didn't do a lot to make themselves better, but they also didn't do a lot to make themselves worse. And with Toronto, I wouldn't expect to get 58 wins. Somewhere above 500, probably. I mean, they've been a good team for a number of years, but they certainly will not be a title contender this year. So with them falling off, I think everybody else can increase a little bit. And then the Knicks, they got 17 last year. I have no idea where to place them
this
year.
They missed out on everybody. Everyone that for an entire season people talked about, oh, they might go to the Knicks. Oh, they're going to draft Zion. They're going to get Kyrie. They're going to get KD.
Anthony Davis,
they
all
didn't
of them.
Get anybody. And if they get more than 20 wins, good for them. I have four playoff teams coming out of the Atlantic. I have the Brooklyn Nets winning the Atlantic.
I have the Sixers winning the Atlantic.
Okay. I think it'll be an interesting division just like it was last year. Moving into the Central, where we had three playoff teams a year ago, Milwaukee, Indiana, and Detroit, while Chicago and Cleveland were on the outside looking in. I don't see many changes here either.
No, not really.
Not in terms of who gets in and who doesn't.
Yeah, Milwaukee is just as good of a team as they were last year. They led the whole NBA last year with 60 wins, essentially the same team. They now have MVP Antetokounmpo on their team still. Last year, he was not the MVP. At this point, we can firmly call him that. There's no reason to think that he's out of the equation this year either. He is so dominant offensively and defensively. He's called the Greek Freak for a reason, because there's no way to guard the guy. He has a mid-range. He gets in deep. You just can't game plan around this guy. I think the Pacers might fall off a little bit, mostly because Oladipo will be missing a few months of the season still, since he blew out his Achilles last year. That was part of the reason the Pacers fell off towards the end of last season. They were only the fifth seed, had 48 wins, which is still good, but compared to the other heavyweights in the East, they just couldn't hang. I think another similar situation this year. And just for the sake of Chicago and Cleveland being bad, Detroit will still manage to find themselves probably around third, probably somewhere around 500 again, I would think.
Yeah, and Detroit added some decent players. I mean, Derrick Rose is not the MVP that he was, but he brings something to teams.
He had a good season
last year.
Markieff
Morris also signed there. Again, not a game changer, but not a bad player to add. I could see them improving a little bit from their 500 record last year. For the Pacers, I think I like them a little bit more, just because we did see them keeping up with the top players in the East last year prior to the injury. I think they can work their way back up there, especially because I don't see the East as having those powerhouses at the top. You know, I think Milwaukee is going to be significantly above the rest of the field. I don't think it's going to be a top four and the rest. I think it's going to be Milwaukee, then the next four or five, and then the rest.
So last year we saw them reach 60 wins. Do you think they could even go above that this year?
Yeah, I do.
I would say I think they 65 can. Is in the realm of possibility for them.
That's actually the exact number I have written is 65. And I don't have exact records for these like I did NHL, but I have roughly 65 is what I have written down. They added Kyle Korver, who I think is a guy who adds some value.
Good depth veteran leadership there.
And again, I'm looking at an Eastern Conference that I think in general is weaker, and I think the Bucks are just as strong as they were, and that results in them getting more victories by default.
They remind me a lot of San Antonio Spurs from last decade. They're a team that has a lot of good players, even great players. Giannis is this example, Tim Duncan for the Spurs. They have good role players, and they just know how to effectively work. With one of the Lopez brothers, I can't remember which one it is, he has a three-point shot that developed last year with the Bucks that he probably attempted five in his whole career before he joined them. So they just know how to get their players doing what they need to do. Chris Middleton's a guy who I think can go even beyond what he did last year. Some, I think, expected him to do a little bit more. Well, I'm expecting him to do more this year. And I think, like I said, somewhere around 65 wins, maybe not pushing 70, but above 65, I think is definitely within their realm of possibility. And I have them obviously winning this division by a landslide.
Yeah, Wesley Matthews also signed there, another decent depth player. I have the Bucks winning as well, and that is a big comparison, them to the Spurs. I mean, that was a successful Spurs team, so we'll see if the Bucks have that kind of future ahead of them. Headed to the Southeast, the final division.
Southeast.
Oh, boy. We had a rough go in this division last year. The Orlando Magic won it at 42-40. They were the only playoff representative. I have only one playoff representative coming out of this division yet again.
Yeah, I agree. And it's not the Magic for me, though. It's the Miami Heat. They were a 39-win team last year, which in general is horrible. That's 4 under .500. But when you're in the crappy Southeast division, that's three games back of first place. So you really have as best of a shot to win it as anybody else in that division does. Orlando was a team that managed to steal one from the Raptors in the playoffs and then got swept in four straight games. Obviously, they weren't going to ever hang with them, and I don't think they will this year either. Miami is a team that has Jimmy Butler now. That's the big name star that they needed to get on their team. While Dwayne Wade had been on the team, he obviously had a departed role from how he played whenever he was with LeBron and Chris Bosh.
Winning championships.
Yeah, it was still Dwayne Wade, but it wasn't the same player. Jimmy Butler, while he may have the stigma around him, he's not the best. He is a very good player still. And when you have as bad as a division as they have, the Wizards last year were my pick in this division. Well, John Wall missed pretty much the entire season with various injuries. He's still out this year. They haven't done a lot to make themselves better. Charlotte lost Kemba Walker. I don't think they have anybody else that's going to replace him. He was basically their whole life, and now he's gone, so they're worse off. And the Atlanta Hawks, maybe they'll get better, but at this point, it's too early to say that any of these teams are going to be dramatically better than they were last year. And even if one of them makes to the playoffs, I don't think it's going to make a difference in the long run either.
No, I think there's three teams in this division that have a whole lot of nothing going on. I thought about picking the Heat to win the division. I'm going to go with the Magic. I just think the Heat lost too many pieces. Butler's a good addition, but losing Wade, losing Josh Richardson, losing Hassan Whiteside, those are a lot of guys that can contribute to a team that are now gone. I don't think the Orlando Magic get more than 45 wins, somewhere in the mid-40s.
That might be even generous, I think.
Probably, but it'll certainly be enough to win that division, I think. So I have them. Who do you have coming out of the East?
Out of the East this year... Last year, I chose the Boston Celtics, and
yep,
I was not going to make that mistake this year, so I'm sure they'll probably be the representative. I'm going with the 76ers. I think they were really strong last year. They took I think they gave the Raptors the best run for their money in the playoffs.
Oh, yeah.
In the second round, they took them to Game 7. Mm-hmm. It was a buzzer-beater shot that was actually what did it for the Raptors. It would have gone to overtime had the shot not gone in, so who knows what would have happened there. But as far as the Sixers are concerned, they had just as good a chance to beat the Raptors as anybody else did. The Raptors ended up beating the Bucks in six. They beat the Warriors in six as well. So if the Sixers were able to do that last year against who was the NBA champion, now they're taking a step back. I think they can give the Bucks the run for their money. The Bucks, I think, are the clear-cut favorite, but the Sixers, I think, have just a little bit. They have enough, I think, to get there.
I'm going to go with the Bucks, and you're a little bit higher on the Sixers than I am, but I agree that the Sixers are certainly a strong team, but I think Milwaukee's stronger. I think, again, they were the best team in the conference last year. They did not take any major hits. They added some nice depth players, and I think there was a lot of shuffling going on in other teams in the conference. I think there's going to be a little bit more of a learning curve for those teams, where I think the Bucks are a little bit more set from last year, a little bit more chemistry. Than some of the other teams will have off the bat. So I'm going to go with the reigning MVP in the Milwaukee Bucks.
It's not a bad pick, though. I think the East, we said it last year, was really wide open. Well, I think most people can say it's not going to be the Raptors this year. It's a little bit less wide open, but pretty much it could be anybody's game, really, though. Now we switch focus to the West, where it's been the Warriors, and only the Warriors for the last few years. Will it be them this year? I don't know. We're going to start in Northwest, actually, because they're the first one that comes up. Last year, the Nuggets were the second seed, and they won the Northwest Division. 54 wins, very good team. The Blazers are right behind them at the third seed with 53 wins. There's a lot of good teams in this division. One team that will not be good is the Oklahoma City Thunder, though, as they have pretty much lost everything. But they have a long-term investment now that does not include the 2019 season.
Yeah, there were four playoff teams in this division last year. I have three this year, Oklahoma City being the one that gets left out. Minnesota's the other one that I don't have getting in because
they don't have a lot going on.
They don't have much going on at all, no. These other teams, though, I think do. I don't think Denver will be quite as strong as they were last year, but they had a steady offseason. I could see them in the high 40s, maybe somewhere around 50. Portland, I think, is going to be solid.
Portland's been solid.
And I think they're going to take a step up and approach closer to 60 maybe than 50 wins this year. And Utah lost a few pieces but added some good ones. And I think this is probably going to be one of the closest divisions.
I think it will be the closest division. Oklahoma City no longer has Paul George. He went to the Clippers. They have Chris Paul now, but that's not a lot because Russell Westbrook is now in Houston. So Oklahoma City was the team that had Harden and Westbrook and Durant, and they won zero titles, and now all three are gone. And the Oklahoma City fans are saying, oh my God, what are we going to do? Well, you're just going to have to suffer through some bad basketball for a couple of years. In the long run, it might work out, but certainly this year they are not in contention for much. Utah, though, you said they're a team that lost something but gained a lot. I think they gained the most out of anybody in this division. They have Mike Conley now at point guard, who he was good in Memphis. If you put him on a good team that's not a Memphis Grizzly, he can be even great.
Sure.
Donovan Mitchell is just getting better. This will be his third season, and his first two have been excellent. Rudy Gobert is a defensive player of the year contender. I agree with you on the Denver part, though. They're going to fall off just a little bit. I think last year was kind of a flash in the pan for them. They're not really going to be able to have 54 wins every season. I think 48 is a good point to put them at.
Sure.
Portland, I think I see them probably around the same 53-54 mark. Utah, though, I see them right above Portland at the top of this division. I like what they did so much. Joe Ingles is great off the bench, too. They have Jeff Green. He's a very good forward off the bench. They just have a very well-rounded team that they don't need to rely on one specific person. But whenever Mitchell is the person that they end up relying on, whenever it's a close game or whatever, that's a good guy to have on your side. So I'm going with the Jazz in this division.
I'm going to go with the Trail Blazers. And I think, you know, like you said, the Jazz added a lot of really good pieces. But it's a very different looking Utah team, which isn't necessarily a bad thing. But I think I need to see what direction that goes in before I'm ready to give them this division. So I'm going to go with the Trail Blazers.
Moving on to the Pacific, last year there were two playoff teams, the 1 seed Golden State Warriors and the 48 win, which were also the 8 seeded Los Angeles Clippers. Had they been in the Eastern Conference, the Clippers would have been good enough for the 5th seed, but because the West is so good, their 48 wins got them the 8 seed and a date first round with the Warriors, and that did not go too well for the Clippers. So what did they do? Well, they just decided to go all in on free agency this offseason. They acquired Kawhi Leonard, reigning finals MVP, maybe the best player in the entire league. And they said, well, that's not enough. We need someone else to help out Kawhi. So we're going to get Paul George from Oklahoma City, who I wouldn't say he's a top 5 player, but top 10, I think.
He was an MVP candidate last year.
He was an MVP candidate last year. And I think top 10, top 5 is easily somewhere you can find him. So when you have two top 10 players on your team now, that's looking really good for your division. Now, the one team that people are saying a lot about, like they do every year for like the last 40, is the Lakers. It's still LeBron's team. But they do have a very different look now. After giving away nearly entire draft team to the Pelicans in exchange for Anthony Davis, pretty much all their former first-round picks, any future first-round pick, anybody that hasn't been conceived yet, he will be a Pelican before he is a Laker because they went all in on getting Anthony Davis for LeBron. I just don't see that whole thing working out. I think they gave up too much in order to get LeBron. I don't think the Lakers are going to be able to contend as well as other people think they might, but who knows? And then there's, of course, the last team, the Golden State Warriors, who, like I said, for the last 5 years, they've been kings of this division. They have a lot of different looks to their team now, too. Andre Iguodala is gone. Kevin Durant is gone. Klay Thompson is injured. It's going to be the Steph Curry show, and this will be the best idea of how much does Steph Curry add to this team. He is a great player. That's no doubt. But when you don't have these other kind of players around him that kind of give him the opening, no Klay, no Durant, what will he do for this Warriors team? I'm very interested to see what he's able to do for them.
I'm very glad you mentioned Andre Iguodala because I think that is
it's a huge
loss. I mean, people are going to talk about KD and they're going to talk about the injuries, and rightfully so, but Andre Iguodala was a finals MVP, I believe.
Yeah.
Was it the first year that they won?
He has more finals MVPs than Curry does.
Right. I mean, he was a guy that on the defensive side was very strong, was a very good role player, took care of business in the playoffs. And I think that's going to hurt them, especially once they get to the postseason. But I still think they're going to be a mid-50 win team. This is still a talented team. I still have faith in Golden State. I'm not going with the whole dynasty is destroyed. I mean, it's more competitive teams now in the West. There's more teams that are going to give them a run for their money. And I don't necessarily think they're going to go win this year, but I still think they're a very good basketball team. I have both LA teams getting in the playoffs. I don't love the Lakers, but they have to get in, right?
You would imagine.
Anthony Davis, like you said, they've given up everything. They have to get in. They have Dwight Howard there for whatever role he might fit. Danny Green is there, which we both have already said we like Danny Green.
Danny Green's good for teams.
They have a new coach in Vogel now who had some success in Indiana. So I have this Lakers team getting in towards the bottom as one of the bottom two teams, but I have them getting in, and I have the Clippers winning the division.
Yeah, I believe I also have the Clippers winning the division. I just think the Warriors I see as like a maybe 51-win team. It's just there's more competition in this division. I think we can both agree, though, the Kings and Suns have no prayer.
Nothing, absolutely not. Sacramento, maybe a little bit. I like Luke Walton, who's now their coach.
Former Lakers coach.
I don't think he was given a fair chance with the Lakers. I think he'll be helpful to this team, but not in the Western Conference.
No, it's too hard for
Phoenix,
them to get in.
Forget about it.
Phoenix was a team I was high on last year.
Fifth new coach in 5 years. Forget about it, Phoenix.
And last division is the Southwest, where we saw the Houston Rockets get in as the division champion last year. 53 wins, good enough for the 4th seed. Once again, just shows how strong the West was. Spurs were the other playoff team. They snuck in at the 7th seed with 48 wins. But the team that I think everybody's talking about is the New Orleans Pelicans. Yes, they gave up Anthony Davis, but they got so much in return. And most importantly, they got the number one overall pick, Zion Williamson, who has looked just as good as the number one pick next to his name indicates in the preseason. He's been excellent for this team. He is really good for them, but I'm not sold on New Orleans just yet, though. It's early. They need to add a lot of pieces. They do have J.J. Redick now, who has never missed the playoffs in his career. So that's something to look forward to with the Pelicans, though.
Interesting. Yeah, I think the Rockets are definitely the team that should stand out above the rest. I mean, it'll be interesting. Yeah, it'll be interesting to see how Westbrook and Harden work together, because obviously when you have stars that like to have the ball in their hands as much as those two, there's probably going to be tensions at some point. But I think it'll work out. Tyson Chandler's there as well, a solid player to add. Chris Paul, I mean, sure, losing him hurts, but Russ is certainly an upgrade, and I think that'll turn out just fine for them. I have one other playoff team here, and it was very close between the Spurs and the Mavericks, and I went with the Spurs.
Mavericks are a good one, too.
With healthy Kristaps Porzingis, the Mavericks have a new look, no Dirk, but I think they'll be just as good as the Spurs. Here's the difference for me, though, is that last year in the division, Dallas was 4-12.
You can't beat the teams in your division. How are you going to finish above them?
That hurts. So, I mean, I think the Spurs are going to take a hit this year. I don't think they're going to be as impressive as they were last year. They surprised me last year. I didn't think they'd make the playoffs. I kind of have to buy into the fact that they probably will, because that's just what they do. But I think it's going to be probably as the 8 seed. But I have them getting in. I have Houston winning the division.
Yeah, I also have Houston winning the division. They've had so many years where they've been at the top. They were a 1 seed a few years ago. Took the Warriors 2-7 games in the conference finals. Lost. One of these years has to be their year, right, Matt?
I don't know. They're going the wrong way. Their time at the top, I think, has come to an end. The Spurs?
No, Houston.
Oh, I'm sorry. Houston, oh, man.
It has to be, right?
You would think.
You go all in on Russell Westbrook, who is an MVP candidate. He does everything possible for a team. And James Harden could put up 35 a game again. People were really discounting James Harden last year. They're saying, oh, well, he's a ball hog. He shoots it too much. This man was winning games for his team. I don't care how much he's touching the ball. When you're putting in, I think he had like, what was it, 30 straight games of 30 points or something like that?
Yeah.
He has some ridiculous streak. When you're doing all of that, you are doing everything you can. If you add Westbrook to that mix, that's another guy that does everything he can to win for a team. I think you can tell where I'm going with this thing.
I can tell where you're going with it.
Houston Rockets this year, NBA champion. More impressively to me, though, was I checked last year to see, oh, I picked the Celtics in the East. Oh, I also picked Houston in the West last year. Interesting. But I had to go with them again this year after I saw all they did in the offseason. I just got to figure this is it, right? It has to be.
See, here's the thing. In the Eastern Conference, if you have a roster like this for a year, like the Raptors did last year with Kawhi, the East is weak enough that should be enough and really will be enough to get you there. Look at LeBron's teams in Cleveland.
No, they were not some good ones there either.
But in the West, should this team be the one that gets Houston there in the next few years? Yes, it should be. But it's not going to be automatic this year with Golden State still there, with a Clippers team that's much improved, with some teams in the Northwest that could be interesting. I'm not going to go with the Rockets. I'm going to go with the LA Clippers.
Not the Warriors, though.
Not the Warriors. I'm going to go with the Clippers because of the Kawhi effect. Kawhi Leonard has been absolutely fantastic. I mean, he always has been. But the way he carried the Raptors last year really speaks volumes
about...
He gets
better every year.
Yes, he does. And with Paul George there as well, a Clippers team that surprised me a little bit last year, I'm going to have the Clippers getting there, not winning, losing to the reigning MVP and the Milwaukee Bucks.
So do you have both of those as the one seeds then?
No. I have Houston as the one seed in the West. I do have Milwaukee as the one seed. I have the Clippers as the three.
You have Clippers as the three. Okay. There's our picks. A lot of NBA to be had this year. 82 games. I'm sure many of these picks will look foolish. As I look back last year, I had the Wizards winning the division. They had 32 wins. I had the Suns making the playoffs for the first time in a while. They had 19 wins. I don't think we're going to be as bold this year. But surely something we said tonight will come back to bite us in the butt a few months away. Either way, NBA season tips off next Tuesday. That's the preview for us right now, though. And we do have another preview lined up for you. And Matt, take us to it.
MLS. MLS soccer. It's
first
playoff
time this year.
It's playoff time. So the playoffs are a little bit different this year. Instead of 1-6 getting in and having an NFL-style format, it's going to be 1-7 in each of the conferences, with the top seed getting a bye in the first round. And let me tell you, Chris, the top seeds in either of these conferences are miles above the rest of the competition, especially in the West, where the LA Football Club has almost, I think, 20 goals for more than any other team in the league. And I believe they're the only team to have given up fewer than 40. They
yep.
are lapping other teams in the Western Conference. And in the East, New York City FC, not quite lapping everybody, but they're a full half a lap ahead. I mean, they're separating themselves as well. I mean, we'll break down each of these first-round matchups, but, I mean, do either of these teams really stand a chance of going down?
Oh, well, I would think that NYFC might, but LA Football Club, they're just incredible this year. They had 72 points. That was best in the league. Next closest was New York, who had 64, but next closest in the West was Seattle with 56. So LAFC was 16 up on the next closest team. They went had 21 wins, 4 losses, and 9 draws.
4 losses.
Yeah, 4 losses all season. Only one of those losses came at home, where they will have home field advantage for the entirety of the playoffs. Ugh, that's rough. They had 85 goals for, which was by far the best in the league. Next closest was New York had 63. They had 37 goals against, best in the league. New York had 42. And their goal differential was a plus 48, where the next closest was New York had a plus 21. We're going to talk about all these matchups, but I think in the end, it's going to have to be this LAFC club. They are just on a tear this year. They average 2.12 points per game. The max you can get in a game is 3. They just win that much that they have everything going for them this year.
Yeah, so let's look at the Eastern Conference. Number 2, Atlanta United will play number 7, New England Revolution. I don't think the Revolution really are that great of a team here. They're about as average as you can possibly be. They're 11, 11, and 12. Doesn't get much more average than that. Goal differential is in the negatives, not what you want as a playoff team. Atlanta had some success last season, had some success this season with 43 goals against. That's pretty solid defense. I don't think Atlanta will have too many issues here.
No, definitely not. Atlanta won both games in the regular season, had a 5-1 margin in those two games. They are the reigning champions of MLS. So as the 2 seed, they are a very strong team, and New England is not much of anything as the 7 seed. The 3-6 matchup is number 3 Philadelphia Union versus number 6 New York Red Bulls. It was pretty close in the season series. It was each team won a game. New York ended up having the better goal differential, 4-3 in those games, but they're pretty close, though. The Union had 55 points, New York had 48, so obviously Philadelphia's a little bit better. They're better at home, too, which is where the playoff game will be held, so they have that going for them. But they only had a plus 8 goal differential to New York Red Bulls, too. So for this being a 3-6, it's a lot closer, I think, than the 2 seeds indicate.
I think it is too, but I still like Philadelphia. I mean, they had a couple extra wins. The goal differential's better. Just all around throughout the course of this 34-game season, they proved to be, I think, just a step above New York Red Bulls, and I think that that'll come through in the playoff game, although I agree, I think this is a close matchup. And then looking at the 4-5, I'm actually going to go with the lower seed, although it is the 4-5, and they do come in with identical 13-10-11 records. But DC United, I think, will come out over Toronto FC. Their defense, really solid, 38 goals against. So I guess I misspoke when I said that LA Football Club was the only team below 40 goals given up. 38 for DC, but only 42 goals scored. So they play a very different type of game than a lot of these teams. Yeah. So I'll be anxious to see how that turns out against some of these other teams that may be more similar to one another. But I like DC.
Yeah, I agree with you on this one. They both times they faced off in the regular season, there was a draw. First one was nothing-nothing. Second time was 1-1. So they are as indifferentiable as you can cut it. But I think the big thing, like you said, DC just does not give up goals. Toronto does. Toronto had a +5 goal differential, but they gave up 14 more goals than DC did. So when they were so close in the regular season, I think in a one game, having the lesser is much better for DC. And if it goes to PKs, which it very well might, seeing how they both drew, it could be anybody's game, but I just have a better feeling about DC, similar to how you feel in this one.
Yeah, we're on the same page in the East. Coming to the West, number 2, Seattle Sounders. Number 7, FC Dallas. I actually might get a little crazy here and go with Dallas.
That's wild.
I mean, I think, you know, a lot of these matchups are very close. Seattle was 16-10-8. Dallas was 13-12-9. I found it interesting looking at these standings, how many teams do not win even half of their games. And I know there's ties, and certainly that makes a difference.
Numerous.
But, I mean, there's a lot of teams here that are pretty average. I mean, they really aren't, you know, nothing's for sure in any of these matchups.
Yeah, there seems to be a lot more draws in MLS than you would see in the Premier League or something. But I can't take Dallas in this one. Seattle is the 2. They were decent in the regular season, had 56 points, which is good, but when you're so far behind LAFC, it's hard to call yourselves that strong. They are 11-2-4 at home, which is great. Dallas is 3-11-3 on the road. That's really rough.
It's not great.
And Seattle has a very good soccer atmosphere. They've been a contender for pretty much the last 5 years. Obviously, they're the 2 seed for a reason. During the regular season, Dallas actually took it. They won one. They had another draw against them, and the dual differential was 2-1. So if there is a team that Dallas can beat, maybe it's Seattle. But Seattle, I think, has this one. Dallas just can't compete on the road as well.
Goal differential of +3 for Seattle makes me a little bit nervous. Better offense and a better defense statistically for Dallas, but we'll see what happens. Number 3, Real Salt Lake taking on number 6, Portland Timbers. Chris, your thoughts?
Well, the Timbers last year were the 5 seed, and they managed to run the table, and, well, they lost to Atlanta in the title game. But as the 5 seed, you can't really complain too much about, especially for having to go play Atlanta, which I think might be the most difficult place to play. They packed that Mercedes-Benz Dome with 70,000, and Portland was no chance. However, this game, I think they have a very good chance. During the regular season, they won both games against Real Salt Lake. It was a 3-1 goal differential. Timbers know how to get it done in the postseason. Last year, we were talking about how good Sporting KC was and how, well, who's going to overthrow them? Well, it was Portland. They kind of rode a train last year. I think they beat Seattle at one point as well. So I don't see a reason why they can't possibly ride a similar train this season, at least for the first round.
I'll go Real Salt Lake. They have a similar type of style to DC. 46 goals scored, 41 given up. So another one of those defensive type of teams. We'll see how that turns out, but I am going to go with Real Salt Lake. Finally, we have number 4, Minnesota United FC, and number 5, LA Galaxy. Minnesota 15-11-8, LA 16-15-3. So the lower seed here actually has more wins. They also have a -1 goal differential, where Minnesota, another one of those stingy defenses, only giving up 43 on the season. I like Minnesota just by a little bit.
I'm going to go with Galaxy in this one. Minnesota's 10-1-6 at home, which is good, but they're not as strong, I think, as other teams are at home. Those 6 draws are a concern for me, because if they draw through regulation time, there's no saying what could happen in extra time or potentially PKs. These teams are both close, but I really don't think this game matters a whole lot in the grand scheme of things in the West anyway. I think every other game is much more important. Whoever wins this will probably lose in the next round anyway, because the winner of this game gets LAFC, so it seems to be a moot point. But for the purpose of this one, I'll go with the Galaxy, because I think they really want to face off against their cross-city rivalry in the second round.
Sure. So that's MLS. We'll continue to update that as the postseason progresses. But we'll flip for now to a postseason that has been progressing, and that's Major League Baseball.
Oh, that's been progressing so much faster than I would have hoped.
The NLCS has concluded. The ALCS was postponed today. The ALCS will resume tomorrow with Game 4. Game 4 for the NLCS was last night, and 4 games was all that it took for the Washington
Dodgers.
Nationals.
Oh, not the Dodgers.
Not the Dodgers. For the Washington Nationals to earn their first trip to the World Series in franchise history. They were one of only 2 teams to have not ever appeared in a World Series. Do you know the other one?
The Seattle Mariners.
It was the Seattle Mariners. Did you know that? Did you look it up?
No, I've seen it because the Nationals hadn't made a World Series ever, so they obviously had a long streak of not making it. Expos made it forever ago, but now with them going back, the second most oldest team to not reach the World Series is now the Pirates, behind the Mariners, who have never reached it. That's why I knew that stat.
Okay, well, there you have it. Anyway, the Nationals, in a 4-game sweep over your St. Louis Cardinals.
I know. It was rough.
Advanced to the World Series and behind some fantastic pitching.
Yeah, speaking of this pitching, I got some metrics on these 4 starts they had. 26 2/3 innings, which is almost good for 3 whole games. 13 hits. That's about 1 hit every 2 innings. 5 runs. That's 1 run every 5 innings, which is terrible. 6 walks, so they had 19 total base runners. And among these 26 2/3 innings, they struck out 40 St. Louis Cardinals. It was masterful. Anibal Sanchez took a no-hitter to the 8th inning. Scherzer took one to the 7th inning. Obviously, both won their game. Steven Strasburg did not quite have as same success without giving up any hits, but he had so many strikeouts that it didn't matter. And in the 4th game, Patrick Corbin said, I'm going to give up 4 runs, but I'll get 12 strikeouts, and we're going to score 7 runs anyway, so it won't matter in the long run. Nationals won the series 4-0. It was a domination. Outscored them 20-6. This is just weird. I don't know what else to make of it. It was weird for the Nationals to get in this position. And it's even weirder to see how well they dominate the Cardinals. And I got some really good stats for you here. Bryce Harper, not on the team this year, right? Surely they're not going to make the playoffs. Well, today is Bryce Harper's birthday. And it happens to be the day after they have advanced to their first World Series. It's just incredible how baseball works like that.
Yes, it is. The only way it would have been better is if they would have made it today. But yeah, the Nationals, baseball has a funny way every year of giving us odd teams that shouldn't be here doing really good things. And this year it's the Nationals. Howie Kendrick was the MVP, by the way, of the NLCS. He had a very good series, especially with the bat.
He had the grand slam in the game 5 of the division series. He's rode that wave. Really good for him.
ALCS. The Yankees got here on a sweep. The Astros went to 5 games. Currently, it's 2-1 in favor of the Astros. The Yankees dominated game 1, 7-0. Game 2, 3-2 Astros in 11. And game 3, 4-1 for Houston behind a fantastic outing from Garrett Cole.
Again,
7 innings, 4 hits, no earned runs. The Astros pitching, similar to the Nationals, has been phenomenal. Garrett Cole has been lights out. And I like the way the Astros look right now. I mean, this is a team that should get to the World Series.
It should.
Right now, they're trending in that direction.
They are trending in that direction, but the Yankees are no easy team to face
off
against
not.
Either. This is the World Series for all intents and purposes. I think the winner of this series will steamroll the Nationals regardless. It looks like it's trending towards the Astros' direction, but the Yankees have some big bats. They obviously showed them in game 1. It was 7-0. Zach Greinke pitched that game. Did not do too great either. Didn't do too great in the division series against the Rays. He gets the mound for game 4, which will be interesting for them because he hasn't been doing too well. It was going to be potentially a bullpen type game, which I am not a fan of. But thanks to the rain showers, we got to push that game back till tomorrow so we get the starts to come in. You said it, Garrett Cole. He does great. He has pitched 3 postseason games. He has given up 1 run. He has about 600 strikeouts in the postseason at this point. It feels like he is just doing everything great. Unfortunately for the Astros, unfortunately for the Yankees, he can't pitch every day for them, though. So I think that's the only path that the Yankees have to success. Gleyber Torres has been really good, too.
The toughest part for the Yankees or for any team trying to beat the Astros is that, sure, maybe you get to Zach Greinke, and maybe you get a couple off of Verlander, but then Cole's coming your way. And if you don't get past Cole, you know, that's one that's not going your way right off the bat. If you don't get past Verlander, you still have Cole coming after that. The odds of getting to all 3 of those pitchers once is slim. The fact that they would have to do it more than once potentially to win the series makes it very difficult. If the Astros continue to pitch this way, Garrett Cole specifically, I think it's going to be tough, even if the Yankees are at their best to pull it off. But I think this is going to be a long, exciting series.
This is a rematch of 2 years ago in the ALCS. We saw it go to 7 that year. No Cole that year. He might be the difference maker this year, but either way, we're in for a good series. But most importantly, we are in for a break right now as we have just been zipping through stuff. So much good content this week, but you're probably wondering, where's the football at? Well, it's coming up right after this, so please stay tuned.
It starts with one thing. I don't know why. It doesn't even matter how hard you try. Keep that in mind. I designed this rhyme to explain in due time. All I know, time is a valuable thing. Watch it fly by as the pendulum swings. Watch it count down to the end of the day. The clock takes life away. It's so unreal. Didn't look out below. Watch the time go right out the window. Trying to hold on to, didn't even know. Or wasted it all just to watch you. Everything inside, and even though I tried, it all fell apart. What it meant to be will eventually be a memory of a time I tried so hard and got so far. But in the end, it doesn't even matter. I had to fall to lose it all. But in the end, it doesn't even matter.
One thing, I don't know why. It doesn't even try. Keep that in mind. I designed this rhyme to remind myself how I tried so hard. In spite of the way you were mocking me, acting like I was part of your property, remembering all the times you fought with me, I'm surprised it got so. Things aren't the way they were before. You wouldn't even recognize.
recognize me anymore. Not that you knew me back then, but it all comes back to me in the end. You kept everything inside, and even though I tried, it all fell apart. What it meant to me will eventually be a memory of a time when I tried so
Welcome back, Sports Takeover, Matt and Chris. We're going to move into football now, as promised, starting with college football, where we actually have some movement.
We have
in the
excitement
upper part
at the top
of the rankings. It's all been at the bottom. Not this week, Chris.
No, we saw number 3, Georgia. Easy home game against South Carolina. They're not ranked. South Carolina, not a good team. Well, I guess Georgia's even worse because the number 3 Bulldogs lost to South Carolina in double overtime. The first major loss of the year, I'd say, in college football. Usually I feel like at this point there's some top team that has a unranked loss, and I think Georgia was probably one of the least likely candidates to have this unranked loss. It was a home game against a not good South Carolina team, and they just fell flat on their faces. They couldn't do it. It got to double overtime because in regular overtime, South Carolina missed a field goal and Georgia threw an interception, and then in double overtime, Georgia missed the tying field goal, which obviously gave South Carolina the win. They only fell to number 10, which I thought was a little bit too generous, seeing how it was the biggest SEC margin of, so the point spread, I should say, was like 16.5, I think, for Georgia. So it was the biggest upset in terms of point spread in like 5 years in the SEC. It was very wild, and hopefully there's more of it to come.
Yeah, certainly a hit for the Georgia Bulldogs, a team that made a move is the LSU Tigers.
Oh, yeah, they're making moves.
They were
right
at number 5. They beat number 7, Florida, 42-28. Florida falls to 9. LSU jumps up to number 2 behind only SEC rival Alabama. Number 6, Oklahoma, 34. Number 11, Texas, 27. That gets Oklahoma back into the top 5. Not quite into the playoff picture, but into the top 5.
They're creeping up there. We have some other tough times upcoming in the top 5. Alabama and LSU obviously will play each other, so that's an in for Oklahoma. Ohio State has to go through the Big Ten, which now sees Wisconsin at number 6 and Penn State at number 7. So the Big Ten is trending in the right direction. Notre Dame finds themselves at 8 because they have not played too many real teams. Had a really tough time, actually, against USC. Only won by one touchdown. It was a very close game. Florida fell to 9th from that defeat to LSU, and Georgia rounds out the top 10. But man, that LSU team, their offense is something else. Usually in the SEC, we see tough defenses. Florida's defense, I think I talked about it last week or 2 weeks ago, is one of the top 5 in the country. LSU put up 42 against them. If LSU is doing that against Florida, who's going to stop them?
I'm excited to see LSU play Alabama because Alabama gets by a lot of times based on who they are, based on what they've already done. I'm not convinced, based on what I've seen so far, that Alabama's the better football team between those
no.
two. I'm not sure what week it is. I think we're still a little ways
it's
away
a few
from
weeks
them
away.
Playing each other.
It's
but,
in November, I'm pretty sure.
We can only hope that this remains 1-2 and that we get the top 2 teams in the nation facing off against each other when those 2 teams meet. But for now, LSU is certainly making their presence well known. As far as undefeated teams, we obviously everybody that's 1-7 is still undefeated. Then we've got number 14, Boise State, number 18, Baylor, 19, SMU, 20, Minnesota, and 24, Appalachian State.
The Mountaineers.
So we've got some interesting teams here in the bottom half of the rankings still without a loss. We have the majority at the top without a loss. We have a lot of teams here that still are winning football games.
I know. Usually at this point, last week we said about how there's like 16 still undefeated. We have less and less every week, but man, there is still a lot, and having one loss is not going to cut it with all these undefeated teams. The only team I would like to see lose this week that's undefeated is Alabama. I would like to see them lose every week if it was possible. They don't allow themselves to be so vulnerable. But still, there's so many undefeated teams. Even as you get towards the bottom, Minnesota comes in this week at number 20. They have been undefeated all season, obviously. Appalachian State at 24. A little bit different circumstances for each of those teams. One is in the Big Ten, the other one is in the Sun Belt, so not quite the same strength of schedule. But either way, Minnesota is finally getting the credit they deserve. Baylor was a team that was on, I think, absolutely nobody's radar going into the year. Their football program has turned around. They find themselves jumping up four this week to 18. They are trending in great directions. They have, obviously, Oklahoma still in the Big 12 to contend with, but Texas is falling down, so that doesn't seem to be too stiff of a competition. But all these SEC schools who have one loss are going to have to start worrying, okay, when are these teams at the top going to start to lose? Because it is not as soon as they hope.
Of all of these undefeated teams that are outside of that top seven, I think Minnesota is the most interesting, simply because I think they have one of the best paths to prove themselves as the season goes on. Playing in the Big Ten, playing against, I think they'll definitely play Wisconsin. I don't know if they play any of the major teams in the East.
Oh, they play Penn State.
Okay. So certainly if those two become wins for that Minnesota team, you're looking at them in the Big Ten title game against maybe an Ohio State. I mean, not that I think it's going to happen, but if Minnesota is for real and if they do continue to win games against those types of opponents, they have an easy path to prove themselves. Some of these other teams, Appalachian State, probably not so much. They'll continue to be undefeated, potentially, and stay, you know, in the middle of the pack as far as the top 25 goes. Looking forward to this weekend, there are some big matchups, obviously Michigan and Penn State, which we'll talk about once we get to quick picks. That's going to be huge in the Big Ten East, especially for a Michigan team that has already lost a couple of games. Looking at the Pac-12, this is a conference that is easily on the outside looking in. Oregon might be their only hope, and they have a number 25 Washington team this weekend. I think there's the potential for that game, and number 13 Utah plays number 17 Arizona State. I think there's potential here for, if these games go wrong, the Pac-12 to be pretty much eliminated now.
As far as I'm concerned, they are eliminated now.
And they very well may be.
I don't think these teams can compete with either Big Ten or SEC teams who are above them. I think they're ranked properly. I think the fact that they lose to each other when they are ranked versus when they're not ranked, it's just, there's no way they can compete with these bigger schools. They shouldn't. They're ranked appropriately. The best schools are at the top right now as far as I'm concerned. Minnesota, I see, is a lot like North Carolina State last year. This time last year, NC State was undefeated, and they were facing off against Clemson, and I was saying, down goes Clemson. Well, Clemson won the title going undefeated, so clearly down they did not go. Minnesota, I think, will fall under the same pattern where, you know, you had a really good start to your season. Maybe you come away with 9 wins. That's a very good season as far as Minnesota is concerned, but it's not going to be too important in the grand scheme of things. But we can talk about it now because they're undefeated as far as we're concerned.
Yes, exactly. So some big things already happening. Some big things will continue to happen in college football.
Huge things happening in the NFL, though.
Oh, my goodness.
The Rams, they are just trying to pick up every single piece that is falling off. It's like you break some tiles in the bathroom and you're just trying to use Elmer's glue to stick them back together. They're trying their hardest. A team that me and so many others wanted to win the Super Bowl this year is now sitting at 3-3 after getting manhandled by the undefeated San Francisco 49ers this week. Their defense held Jared Goff to less than 90 yards passing, 7 points. They just looked like a team that was in no way, shape, or form a Super Bowl contender. So they decided to make some changes yesterday. They sent cornerback Marcus Peters to the Baltimore Ravens in exchange for linebacker Kenny Young in a 5th. And many of you say, well, they also put Tlaib on the IR. Well, what are they going to do with the other cornerback position? Well, they gave Jacksonville the entire house by acquiring Jalen Ramsey for a 2020 and 2021 first-round pick and a 2021 fourth-round pick. So they're really going all in on their defense this year, and they are really trying as hard as they can to win right now.
It's an interesting move. I mean, this is a team that right now should be better than they are. And I guess it depends on how they feel about their team. I look at it as a team that needs to work some things out, but has the pieces there already. They clearly feel like they need to take that extra step, bring in Jalen Ramsey, and give up a lot of future to improve right now. We'll see if that works out, but as you mentioned, right now they do sit at 3-3 behind the 5-0 Niners and the 5-1 Seahawks. Another team that's at 3-3 after starting 3-0, the Dallas Cowboys,
A
failed two-point conversion lose to the New York Jets, who get their first win of the season. Come on.
What the heck is that?
Come on.
I think this was probably one of the locks of the week, saying, all right, yeah, Dallas, 4-2, easily will win this game against the Jets. Instead, they get back Sam Darnold, who I guess did his best Tom Brady impression to lead his team to victory. The Jets look like the worst team in the league the last few weeks without Darnold. And I guess he is that good and important for this team to get them over the hump against the Cowboys. But what is going on in Dallas? They started off 3-0. They had some weak opponents. Many people, including myself, are saying, okay, you know, Cowboys, they're good. I picked them to win a division. I think good things are going to come for this team. And suddenly here we are talking about them being 3-3, which, thanks to the mediocrity of the NFC East, has them in a tie for first place with the Eagles. But they play the Eagles this week, and both these teams are trending in very opposite directions. Eagles started off a little bit rocky, but they're coming into their own. Now they're getting some people back. The Cowboys really haven't been missing any pieces, but they're not getting it done, though.
No, and the NFC East has returned to where it's supposed to be.
Average.
Right around 500. Some other interesting scores. The Carolina Panthers beat the Tampa Bay Buccaneers 37-26.
Kyle Allen gets it done again.
That puts the Panthers at 4-2, drops the Bucs to 2-4. Interesting moves there in the NFC South. The Houston Texans over the Kansas City Chiefs at Arrowhead 31-24. Both of those teams are 4-2.
Somehow.
Two straight losses for the Chiefs. A little bit concerning, but at the same time, we knew that defense was suspect. Deshaun Watson's a good quarterback.
Houston's a good team.
Houston's a, yeah. I mean,
I like them more
be.
Than you do.
I like them. It just, every time I get my hopes up about them, they come out with a 13-12 win against Jacksonville, and I question whether or not they're actually a good team. They're very interesting. At 4-2, though, they are taking a lead in that division. The Washington Redskins beat the Dolphins in a battle of winless teams.
Wow, the Suck Bowl.
The Dolphins went for it at the end, didn't get it, but it was a good game for those two teams. At least some entertainment for a couple of teams that have struggled to this point. The Steelers get a much-needed victory over a really, really struggling LA Chargers team. And by the way, don't care how bad some of the other teams around the NFL may be and what their attendance looks like, it's better than the Chargers. The Chargers attendance, it's a small stadium, it's a soccer stadium, but it was
about 30,000 or so.
It was owned by the Pittsburgh Steelers,
80% Steelers,
to the point that you could on national television easily hear Steelers chants. That's bad, and this isn't a bad Chargers team. They're struggling now, they're injured, but overall this is not a bad Chargers team. I didn't expect that in LA. That's a tough pill to swallow.
As far as NBC viewership goes, LA was not even one of the top 10 markets for that game,
which is insane.
San Diego was up there because I guess people watched them out of spite or whatever. But man, not a lot of good things going for the Chargers right now.
No. Another hard pill to swallow is for the Detroit Lions.
The hardest.
Who absolutely got cheated out of a victory.
Robbed. Blind.
23-22, they lose to the Green Bay Packers. The Packers go to 5-1. The Lions fall to 2-2-1. And it's because of two penalties that were called illegal hands to the face. No hands made contact with any faces.
It was the chest and the shoulder, which you are very well allowed to push on. It was defensive end. Trey Flowers, very good defensive end. He was pushing on the guy so hard that his head jolted back, to which the referee happened to glance at. It was like, oh, his head's going back. Hands to the face. Oh, his head's going back again. Hands
Twice.
To the face. Mason Crosby, please have this 20-yard field goal as time expires. I beg of you, Green Bay, win this game. Huge importance in the division. If Detroit wins, they're the first seed. They lost, they're now the fourth seed. In a division that's this close, you can't have these kind of bonehead calls being made by these referees that have such a huge impact on the outcome of these games.
Yeah, one made that a chip shot field goal for the win, and that was on third down. Otherwise, Detroit probably gets the ball back.
Yeah, they do.
Down, but they get the ball back. Prior to that, the first missed call that was made gave the Packers, again, a first down off of a third down that went from what would have been a field goal attempt to a touchdown within 24 hours of the game ending. The NFL acknowledged that they were missed calls.
Oh, we were wrong.
That doesn't help the Detroit Lions at all. Stupid. And the Packers are beginning to run away a little bit with this division. Bottom line is the officiating needs to be better, and the Detroit Lions did not deserve to lose that football game.
No, they did not. There's so much little else to say about it. They find every possible way not to win. A tie in week one against the Cardinals could have been a win. This should have been a win. This should be a one-loss team. Now, instead, they are 2-2-1 on the outside looking in for not really too much fault of their own. Yes, they had opportunities to win, but whenever Green Bay is being gifted the victory, it's so hard to come away with it. Another takeaway I had was Seattle. They're just really good.
Ooh, yeah.
Which every week we're like, okay, you know, the Seahawks team, they're winning again. But no, I think
I'm actually starting to believe it a little bit.
They're for real. 5-1 now. They beat the Browns on a comeback, too. Russell Wilson is just doing everything possible. He is awesome, amazing. There's no wrong word to describe him that shows how excellent he has been this year. Browns are really struggling just as much as the Chargers are, too. But the Seahawks is very good.
And a much-needed bye for the Cleveland Browns. So that wraps up football rather quickly. There was a lot to talk about. Hopefully there will be more to talk about next week. But for now, we will get to the normal quick picks and bold predictions to wrap up the show. So to start, quick picks, Texans at Colts. I'm going to go with the Colts. They're coming off a bye. They're at home. It's a very tight division. This is an important game. And like I said, the Texans have looked good here in a couple weeks, but they always seem to follow that up with a poor performance. So I'm going with the Colts.
I made my picks last week based on thought. This week I made them based on impulse. Hopefully that'll do better for me. I also have the Colts in this one. Like you said, Texans, they just seem to be a different team week in and week out. And Colts coming off the bye is a very good reason to go with them. I have Indianapolis. Ravens at Seahawks. The Seahawks team is for real. I hate the Ravens. I'm going with Seattle.
I'm going with the Seahawks as well. I have to buy in a little bit. Baltimore's been shaky against good teams. I'll take Seattle. The Eagles at the Cowboys. I'm going with the Eagles. The Cowboys are falling apart. I like Philadelphia. Obviously, they're not going to reach the 13-3 that I said they would, but they're going to beat the Cowboys.
Flip a coin on this one. It's so hard to pick this game. I went with the Cowboys, but it could very well easily be the Eagles. It'll probably be a field goal game. I'm sure there will be underwhelming performances from Dak Prescott and Carson Wentz alike. It's going to be a 4-3 victor at the top of their division next week, and they're both going to probably feel just as bad as they do right now, and just as bad as I do about picking this game. But I'm going to go with Dallas in this one. Switch in focus to college now. Number 12, Oregon, goes to number 25, Washington. At the beginning of the season, I would have expected these two rankings to be flipped. However, they are where they are. But I still think Washington is the better of these two teams. I'm going with the Huskies.
So the Huskies were my preseason pick to win this conference. I was set to pick them. And then I realized that the Oregon Ducks have given up 25 points over their last five games.
Oh, that's pretty good.
Holy cow, it's fantastic. I'm taking Oregon. 17, Arizona State travels to number 13, Utah. I'm going to go with Utah. The Sun Devils have been in and out of the top 25, one of those teams. Utah has put up 30 or more points in every game they've played so far, so I'm going to go with the Utes.
Yeah, Utah is pretty solid throughout the season. One bad loss to USC, but they are still a very good team. Arizona State have been up and down, as you said. I think this is a week where they go back down. I have Utah in this one. Big Ten matchup, number 16, Michigan, tries to do something good for Jim Harbaugh as they travel to number 7, Penn State. There's no way Michigan wins this game, right? There's just no possible way. The atmosphere Penn State will provide. Penn State's a very good team, too. Their defense is strong. Offense could probably use some work, but seeing how Michigan gave up 35 to Wisconsin, there's no reason to think that Penn State can't put up a similar amount. I have Nittany Lions in this one.
Yeah, I do, too. Michigan's just been so inconsistent at times this year. Penn State's looked pretty solid. This will be a really good test for the Nittany Lions, but at home, I think they'll take care of business. Astros and Yankees, we're going to take a look not just at the next game, but at the series as a whole, just to mix things up a little bit. I picked the Astros to win the World Series. I'm going to continue with the Astros, and I'm going to say that they win in 6. I think they'll take the next one. I think the Yankees will take one back before they head to Houston for the final two games, that dumb 2-3-2. And then I think the Astros will take care of it at home. The pitching's just too good.
I said Yankees at the beginning of the season. The Cardinals are out, so I got to have one of my picks make it, right? I'm going with the Yankees in this one. It very well could be the Astros. I think 7 in this series is a certainty, though, for me. I'm more certain on the 7 more so than the Yankees and Astros. Also, last week I picked all road teams. This week I'm going for all home teams except this playoff series. So we'll see if I have a better fortune this week at least.
to the bold predictions we go. I'm going to start in the NBA. We talked about the season preview. I talked about how much I like Kawhi Leonard, and I think he's going to be the MVP. For as good as he's been, he has not yet won an MVP, two finals MVPs. I think this is going to be the year, like you said earlier, he continues to get better. I think he's going to do it with the Clippers this year, and I think he's going to be the NBA MVP.
I'm related to your bold prediction about the NBA, but exactly related to it, I'm also going to pick the MVP. We didn't even plan this either.
No,
just happened to be the path we went
down. Don't pick Kawhi.
I'm not going to pick Kawhi.
Thank you.
I'm going to go to the East. Want to take a guess?
Giannis again?
No, Joel Embiid.
He is very good
without Jimmy Butler. He will get the ball more. He could put up 30 a game. He is getting better every year. I think that he will win the MVP for the Sixers and obviously help get them to that title game at least.
Very nice. I'm going to look at the college football playoff. I think the top four teams, the teams that get in, will combine for one loss. We have talked about the undefeated teams that there are. I wanted to say that they'd all be undefeated. The only reason I didn't is because I like LSU and Alabama, and they have to play each other. So I'm going to go one loss for the four teams that make the playoffs.
Ooh, I like that one. A lot of undefeated still around. Probably come towards the end of the season. A few less, but still a lot might be good. I'm going to go to NHL for my second one. The Devils, they had the number one overall pick, Jack Hughes. Well, they suck. They're 0-4-2. And Coach John Hines better figure it out really fast, or else come New Year, he's going to be looking for a new job, because I think if they are still in a position where they are not in the playoffs come December, January time, he's got to be out of there. This is the Devils team that has put so many resources in. They've had number one pick year in and year out, have Taylor Hall, have PK Subban. Well, they don't have a win. They barely have 2 points. John Hines, you got to figure it out, man.
Took 60 minutes, but there's the energy. There's the heat from Chris. My final bold prediction will come from the NFL, and I hate to make this one, but I'm going to say that the New England Patriots win the AFC in the regular season by 3 games over everybody else. Right now, they're 1.5 up on Buffalo in the division, 2 up on every other division leader. The Chiefs are struggling a little bit. The Texans are an inconsistent team at times, and the Ravens, I don't even think, are going to be the team that wins that division by the time it's all said and done. The Patriots always seem to just have the easiest schedule, even though they probably always don't. It always feels like they do.
It does.
They're 6-0. They're going to take care of business.
Yeah, if they finish at 14-2, which I think might be the low water mark, a team being 11-5 would be that 3-game differential, so I very much see that happening. I'm going to go to college football for my last one, Michigan. They have been struggling mightily. They're ranked 16th right now. They have Penn State this week. They have Notre Dame next week. Those two teams are in the top 10. After they lose both of those games, they will be outside of the top 25 this year. Jim Harbaugh, his time is... the clock is ticking. Not so fast as John Hines's is, but Wolverines are no longer the same Michigan team that we thought they were.
Chris just wants every coach out of here.
Cut him out left and right. I was right about Jay Gruden, at least.
You were. Speaking of out of here, our time is up. We've enjoyed it, as always. Thank you guys for tuning in. We'll be back at the same time next week. Until then, good night, everybody.